all other visitors. We are going to start in a short while. I'd just like to sum up before we proceed with the actual agenda. There seem to have been a number of confused messages that have been going on in the media regarding the process here at Parliament. So allow me just, so that there is no misunderstanding about the process. The bill is introduced to Parliament by the Minister. After that, the committee sends out invitations for written representations on comments on the bill. Once we receive the written representations, we look at it and we invite those people that have made representations to come and to present at public hearings. It is not always the case that everybody that has made written representations gets shortlisted to or invited to the public hearings. However, in this case, because of the interest in the subject matter of the bill, everybody that had made written representations was invited to the public hearings. What follows after the public hearings is we allow the state, the law advisors, Mr. Daniels' office, to come and comment on some of the issues that have been raised in the public hearings. They are the ones that certify the bill, the constitutionality of the bill, in terms of the process that are followed by Parliament. And after that, the committee would normally invite the minister that introduced the bill also to give comments on the concerns and the issues that were raised at the public hearings. Now, we have already had the state law advisor addressing the committee on his views on some of the issues that were raised. And those of you who would have heard him, those of you that were present would have heard him. The procedure regarding the minister is going to take place today. The minister is here today to comment on the issues that have been raised, the concerns that have been raised in the public hearings. But the process that will follow after that is the committee will then look at all the issues that was raised in the public hearings, the issues that was raised when the law advisors responded, and the issues that will be raised by the minister. And then the real processing of the bill takes place. The committee will then only consider whether alterations, amendments should take place. So those of you that have created the perception that the bill is already a law or that it has already gone through Parliament or that no changes are going to take place, or that the committee has already accepted the bill in the form that it is, you have created an incorrect perception, because this Parliament has got procedures it has to follow that is set out in the Constitution, and public hearings and to hear the voice of the public is part of what we have to do. And so, having said that, allow me to go on to the apologies. The Honourable Mentor, Ngabadeli van Wyk, the Honourable De Lange, is unfortunately not going to be able to be here today. They have all tendered written apologies. There are a number of documents that have come in, people that have wanted to comment on the bill at this late stage. Today has been set aside for the Minister to deal with his responses. Honourable members will receive that in the bundle, and we will deal with that at a later stage and the way forward on those pieces of correspondence. The response of the minister, I understand, is going to take a number of meetings. The minister does not intend to finish today. I understand that the response is quite extensive. And so we will be looking at more meetings where the minister will come and present. Today I have been requested from a number of members that we don't go past 11 because of the some problems that members are having getting flights home and also some personal problems. So we do not intend to go beyond 11. The meeting will, if necessary, be adjourned at 11 or sooner, depending on the minister's presentation. Having said that, I do not intend to waste any more time. I'm going to hand over immediately now to the minister.
Forgive me, a single clarification on what you've just said. The bill is now in our hands. We start the process of legislating under the Constitution. But I think I just heard you say that the minister will be recalled and more than once, and why, and that's unusual.
No, I think you have not understood me correctly, Honourable Member. The minister is entitled to a response to the concerns that were raised in the public hearings. His response is quite an extensive one. He will not be able to finish it today. And so it's going to take maybe one or two meetings. And I thought I'd just mention that. The Honourable Abrasini.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just attending my apologies. I need to pop in Constitutional Review Committee where I need to give a report, and then I will pop back in. I've read the response of the minister. Will there be an opportunity for engagement with the minister today or at the next meeting?
Depending on how soon the minister finishes now, there would be a time to raise questions on the response, and also from my understanding, the minister won't finish today, so there will be a fair opportunity also to interact with the minister on his responses. Honourable Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members. as the Chairperson has said, we are giving our response today, but the detailed actual proposal on amendments, we hope that we'll be able to deal with that in the subsequent work of the committee and further clarification of our response. But firstly, thank you for giving me this opportunity. Following the public hearings, I, the Minister of State Security, requested the chairperson of the committee, Mr. Pierges, for some time to consider and respond to issues raised to help facilitate the work of Parliament through this ad hoc committee. The responses by members of the public have come from various organs of civil society, such as individuals, media, academics, and research institutions, and have mainly sought to support or strengthen the provisions of the bill. This is a historic and welcome development, as it is for the first time in the history of our democratic dispensation that such robust debate and public interest has been shown on matters pertaining to national security and intelligence. This is a sign of our maturing democracy. It is our hope that such interest would not wane, but instead would be more robust, more honest, more focused, and address the real challenges facing South Africa, our beloved country. Notable as this development is, it is a common cause that some of the submissions are in principle opposed to any form of limitations of right of access of information as provided for in our Constitution. Our Constitution, the African Charter on Human and People's Rights, and the International Charter on Human and People's Rights and the International Covenant on Human Rights. Despite this, most of the issues raised during the public hearing were very constructive, forward-looking, and would have strengthened our dispensation. I know that some believe that protecting state from state information from unlawful disclosure, destruction, alteration, and loss serve as an important purpose, and thus far South Africa lacks a coherent regime to classify and declassify information appropriately and effectively. Furthermore, some have recognized that a degree of confidentiality and secrecy will be required in order to advance legitimate national security goals, and that certain information may be exempted from disclosure by the state despite the broad constitutional rights of access to information. Some have also pointed out that, quote, the broadness and the vagueness of some of the bill's potential, of some sections of the bill, potentially interferes with the realization, accessibility, and enforceability of the right of access to information. In addition, it has been advised that the bill must be careful to avoid making it more difficult for citizens seeking to obtain information from government departments and other organs. Chairperson, importantly, it has been concluded by some submissions that, quote, the bill has the potential to play a significant role in the transforming our society from a culture of secrecy and repression to one of transparency, accountability, and responsiveness, and to become a leading precedent for open and democratic government the world over. To achieve these goals and the desirable objectives it articulates, the bill must properly respect openness, free speech, and access to information. Close quote. On the basis of an inter alia this submission, this presentation will focus on the reasons for enactment of the bill, summarize some of the main concerns raised in the bill, and recommend the way forward for consideration by the other committee in their quest to finalize the bill. Let me begin with the background to the Protection of Information Bill. Chairperson, since 1994, various ministerial intelligence reviews committees have focused on the way the intelligence service dispensation operated. Many of these reviews have sought to improve the internal processes, including the management of information. Importantly, the reviews noted the uneasy feat of the Protection of Information Act of 1982, the lack of a coherent system of protecting information, its classification and declassification, its reviews after a lapse of a given period and granting access to the general public for daily use, research, scientific inquiry, and for advancing their rights as provided for in the Constitution. From some of these reviews, various issues have arisen which call for serious reflection on the classification and declassification system that has been obtained. Some of these reviews recommended, among others, that principles and guidelines contained in their report should form the basis for a unified system of classification and declassification, as well as the custody of sensitive information, and should be included in the national security policy for South Africa. Close quotes. This aspect has in part informed the sections of the bill dealing with the guiding principles and guidelines for protecting information. Other notable recommendations from the review included that the Protection of Information Act of 1982 should be replaced by a secrecy legislation compatible with the Promotion of Access to Information Act of 2002 and the Constitution. The heads of institutions should appoint internal review mechanism comprising of senior staff representing different functional areas of responsibility. Thirdly, the reviews also suggested that critical databases should be protected by government. This is the background that has led to the legislative proposal on the Protection of Information Bill by successive ministers for intelligence services. It is therefore not at all connected to their media appeals tribunal, whose origin can be traced to 2007 resolutions of the African National Congress. The bill predates this resolution and should not, and would therefore not at any level be linked. Importantly, media appeals tribunal remains work in progress even within the African National Congress and is not yet government policy. To mix the two is to deliberately confuse the issues and to create undue conspiracy. Chairperson, may I come to the reason why do we have to enact this bill? Other than this historical background that has necessitated the bill, there are several other clear and present dangers that call for the enactment of a law that will help protect national security of South Africa. These emanate from outside and inside this country, and include, inter alia, espionage, information peddling, alteration of critical databases, as was recommended by review committees mentioned previously. The bill also provides opportunities for advancing the existing space of openness, as it firstly decreases the four levels of classification to three. Two, it criminalizes the abuse of classification system for ulterior motives, such as hiding corruption, maladministration, incompetence and inefficiency in the public service. Thirdly, it improves access to information through a coherent review and declassification system. And lastly, it creates additional avenues for accessing classified information by providing a procedure for requesting such access. The briefing will now further elaborate on these provisions of the bill. Let me start with the threat of increasing espionage. Chairperson, following the demise of apartheid, counterintelligence reports have continued to indicate that foreign intelligence services or spies are hard at work formulating targets of information collection. The onset of democracy has also saw many countries move their main embassies from other countries in the Southern Africa region to South Africa. Some of these embassies increase phenomenally the numbers of staff in order to increase their capacity, their collection capacity. Some of their collection targets include profiling those who are involved in policy formulation, such as government leaders, such as president, vice-president, ministers, deputy ministers, the leadership of the ruling party and the leadership of opposition party. His efforts are to ensure that they can unduly influence the evolution of politics and the future plans of South Africa. Espionage continues to be real in our midst, and South Africa cannot afford to underestimate this threat. South Africa must therefore take necessary steps to protect information at its disposal, instead of giving easy access to rhetorics that are banned of having an edge over us. The main focus of foreign intelligence services in the world has shifted from traditional threats to new frontiers, such as advancing economic security interests of their country. These include carving themselves as a role as a result of climate change, for instance, in enhancing their food security. They do this by obtaining, by any means necessary, trade secrets of hostile and friendly countries, blunting the competitive edge of their rivals and competitors. South Africa, although it remains, for instance, a world leader in the production of medical isotopes, continues to face challenges as many countries seek to catch up with it and to steal scientific research capacity to advance their own interests. As an example, also, South Africa has been a major producer of animal vaccines in the world, but due to failure of the country in protecting these vaccines, some of the country's capacities have been lost to rivals from whom we now buy these vaccines we use to export. This has impacted negatively on our food security and farming community is the daily witness to this challenge. Our people will today victims of poverty due to the failure to protect this capacity. what we basically want to say here, I saw some of my colleagues laughing, that these are real threats. The competition among food security, water security, and energy security is a focus of most of these foreign spies, and they'll do anything to reduce our competitive edge as a country, as a nation, not as a government, in this regard. If I come back to the information peddling, information peddling has since the inception of the new South Africa not only been victimizing the country, but have witnessed information peddlers from South Africa undermine democratic processes in some of our neighboring countries. Information peddlers are seeking every available opportunity to fuel instability, mistrust, and conflict in the country and the continent. Information peddlers generate documents alleging conspiracies, plots, and coups based on snippets, inferences, innuendos, gossips, and rumors. As an example, South Africans will recall that President Nelson Mandela was given this fantastic report by the then chief of South African National Defense Force, General Meyer, alleging a coup plot by leading members of the African National Congress and the late Michael Jackson. This information has been gained from the information peddler that has been dismissed source of the police. While General Meyer lost his job, information peddling did not end, as various peddling reports such as Peggy Jacobs' conspiracy, the Brownsmall consolidated report, have since seen the light of day. All subsequent reports have alleged conspiracies involving prominent members of the ANC, COSATU, and the SACP, seeking to overthrow their own government. Consequently, these peddlers claim to have caused untold disruption and divisions within the government system, ruling party, and its allies, and have negatively affected the project of democratization in the country. Coming to protection of valuable information from alteration, destruction, loss, newspapers are full of many saddening stories about experiences of South Africans whose information contained in our critical state databases have been either altered, lost, or destroyed by public servants who sometimes collaborate with criminal syndicates. Here are some of the examples that many South Africans can relate to. First, many young women have found themselves married to foreigners that they have never met and whose ill-gotten marriages were an act of corrupt public servants in the Department of Home Affairs. Many a company owner are presently going through court processes to reclaim their company that have been hijacked by individuals who have bought corrupt public servants in the Department of Trade and Industry to alter critical databases. Many a family have suffered at the hands of inexperienced drivers that bought fraudulent driver's license from corrupt public servants in the Department of Transport, who falsified exams, create fake files for learner driver's licenses and road tests. Many companies have been robbed by syndicates who create twin companies that are a close cooperation bearing names of more familiar brands and then cash in their shares. Many families in the Northern Cape, following endless deceit by corrupt public servants, have been kept out of social security net with their details having been altered in the databases, the consequence of which is poverty and hunger visited upon them. More recently, some syndicates have targeted SARS, South African Revenue Service, where, with the cooperation of a certain officials, checks meant for companies were changed with huge financial loss suffered by these companies. In addition, hostile individuals, where they cannot gain cooperation from public servants, resort to cybercrime. Chairperson, I'm saying, if they fail to use our corrupt officials, certain hostile individuals resort to cybercrime and hack their way into unprotected government databases where they create fictitious information to advance their criminal intentions. The above are real-life experiences of the challenges posed by unauthorized alteration of government databases and some destruction of information contained therein. A similar threat will face the justice system as we migrate from hard copy to electronic case documents. You can imagine how the deleting of the electronic case data case docket will still create havoc in the system, which we have experienced with the death of and destruction of hard copy dockets. These experiences are still fresh in our minds. So we say protection, this database, we must. Clearly, South Africans will agree that unauthorized alteration, destruction, and loss of information has far-reaching consequences for the citizen and residents alike. Their ability to live free from fear, free from want, is impeded, as this information is the lifeblood that drives state processes. Those who pass away after committing suicide following frustration by public service seek to legitimately get their own documents are a permanent reminder of how critical information is. Protect these databases, we all must. If we fail to do so, please answer me when I ask, what will the constitutional right to access to information mean if there are no documents, or these are inaccurate documents in the possession of the state which do not facilitate the request of our people to exercise their right? Chairperson, we seek to build a secure, prosperous, and open society. Contrary to those who claim that Protection of Information Bill seeks to close public discourse and impinge on the freedom of expression, association, and free exchange of ideas, and deny the young democracy the oxygen it depends on to live, the bill supports openness in various ways. For example, it lowers the classification categories, as we have said, from 4 to 3. It provides the framework for declassification of information and for the review of classified information. Importantly, it adds to the existing avenues of accessing classified information by establishing a procedure requesting such access to such information. These are clearly novel, internationally accepted, and democratic inspired objectives. Chairperson, by criminalizing the abuse of classification system to advance ulterior motives such as hiding corruption, incompetence, and maladministration, Big seeks to ensure that South Africa continues to be an open, accountable, and democratic society, our hard-fought constitution enjoins the country's fee. By providing stringent sentences, the bill seeks to ensure that these serve to deter, serve as a deterrent, while protecting those who err in requesting, in the quest of doing their job. Indeed, this bill can never be seen as a throwback to the apartheid era, and is nothing like what the racist apartheid regime could have dreamt of. Consequently, we concur with those who submit that, having considered the Protection of Information Bill, we support its objectives to the extent that these are intended to introduce a new dispensation that is more consistent with our Constitution and which would reflect a shift away from apartheid-style secrecy in relation to access to information. In particular, we support the long overdue proposed repeal of the current Information Act of 1982. Contrary to this throwback claim, others have also added their voice during the public hearing by observing that, quote, the drafters of the bill deserve credit for crafting proposed legislation that is radically different from apartheid era Protection of Information Act of 1982, and that in large measure strive to accommodate conflicting constitutional interests and rights of the public and the state in a balanced and an equitable manner, close quote. None would have said this if the bill was really a throwback to apartheid. More importantly, the ANC fought for these rights and spearheaded the writing of this constitution. The ruling party would be the last to want to revert back to the old days of apartheid, especially because the pains, the strokes of harshness of that period and the inhumanity with which we and our people were despised are still fresh in our sight. As the ANC government, we have vowed that never and never again shall we see the return of the apartheid days of this land. It is worth repeating that before sensitive information can be classified, a heavy responsibility rests with the head of department concerned to make sure that there is a clear, justifiable, and legitimate need to do so, and that there is also a demonstrable need to protect such information. This is to ensure that South Africa keeps its secrets safe while at the same time it remains an open, accountable, and democratic society marked by the free exchange of information and ideas. From the foregoing, various reasons justifying the need for the protection of information have been advanced while referring to the provisions in this bill. Having clarified the background and the rationale for this bill, we'll now move to look at the critique of the bill and provide a response to the said submission. Chairperson, it is now a matter of public record that the Committee on the Protection of Information Bill conducted public hearings on the 21st to the 22nd of July 2010 to afford South Africans an opportunity to make submissions on the bill. Side by side, this public hearing was a public debate driven by electronic and print media on the meaning and impact of the bill on the democratic order. In this section, we reflect some of the main criticism of the bill, which is summarized briefly. The comments include, among others, the following. Firstly, the overbroad definitions in the bill make the bill to be inconsistent with the Constitution. In this regard, some have submitted that, quote, we note with concern that the key provisions of the bill are overly broad and vague, and that it provides for a wide criteria enabling information to be classified. These provisions seriously undermine transparency, accountability in the governance as envisaged in Section 2 of the bill, close quote. Some of the submissions have welcomed the general principles of state information. In their own ways, they have said that, by and large, the principles of classification are sound and reasonable, but have requested the exclusion of national security interest override. The argument being that the national security override compromises the utility of the general principles. Regarding the provisions of departmental policies and procedures for classifying information, it has been argued that the heads of organ of state should not classify categories of information in the interest of consistency and transparency. This prerogative must be confined to the Minister for state security. As a motivation, some have added that secrecy must be seen not as an ordinary everyday means to protect the national interest, but as something extraordinary and unusual. Close quote. Pertaining to commercial information, a number of submissions call for the inclusion of a public interest override provision. Furthermore, it has been submitted that some sections of the bills were not in line with the Protection Disclosures Act and that certain sections of Companies Act of 2008 and the Promotion of Access to Information Act of 2000. The bill is vaulted as restricting the disclosure of information that has been classified, even if such disclosure is furthering the rights of wronged and whistleblowers. On the classifying authority, some of the submissions argue that the bill grants administrators extensive powers, limit constitutional rights without independent supervision or checks and balances. In addition, the appeal process, in relation to the appeal process, it has been argued that time frames are unduly long and must be reviewed, and that an independent appeal process, excluding the minister as interested party, must be established to deal with all the appeals. As far as the monitoring is concerned, it has been argued that the state security agencies was geared towards the protection and safeguarding of the information rather than dissemination of information. An impartial independent body was suggested to undertake the monitoring function. In addition, the lack of offenses for failing to report as obliged in this section was seen as a challenge that needs redress in the bill. In some of the submissions, there were concerns about the fact that the penalties were too harsh, especially for unauthorized disclosure of information. It was feared that this might be used as a substitute for prudent, ordinary departmental safeguards to secure information and prevent unauthorized disclosure. There was a call for the inclusion of public interest defense clause in the bill. This means that the state must permit anyone to leak or solicit classified information for public disclosure, and then be allowed in court to prove that the leak was done so as to advance public interest. On the need to protect information that is before the court, if this provision has been seen as failing to give proper effect to the principles of open justice covered in our Constitution. Chairperson, having applied my mind to these matters, it is critical that I should now provide the other committee with my considered response. The response is as follows. Most of the commentators and submissions have argued that some definitions in the bill are overboard and vague, and therefore unconstitutional. This is one of the main reasons that has been advanced for the alleged return to the apartheid era style of operating. It is critical that this issue is fully addressed. Firstly, the bill is clear in its quest to balance secrecy and openness, and has provided principles that it should inform the protection and classification of information. It has created checks and balances for the limitation that has been included. On the balance, the scale are in favor of additional avenues for accessing information and criminalizing the abuse of the classification system. Importantly, as a procedural matter, no bill is tabled in Parliament without having been rigorously and thoroughly reviewed by state law advisors who specify it as being constitutional. This has been done. The above steps, notwithstanding, have been looked at at the points raised by members of the public and have accepted that to be true to the object of the bill, some of the definitions must be revisited by the Minister and our ministers would avail our input in this regard. However, I'd like towards the end to return to some of the issues raised during this submission. I believe that it will have to work, we have the work of the committee with the objectives of reworking and narrowing down some of these definitions to make the bill clearer, leaner, and more user-friendly. While some of the submissions welcome principles and guidelines, they objected to national security override. This is hard to understand because the International Covenant on Human Rights and the African Charter on Human and People's Rights and the Johannesburg Principles on National Security and Access to Information all provide for the limitation of right to access to information on the basis of national security. Our considered view is that the minimum must be to ensure the balancing of the competing rights of openness and national security as provided for in the international best practices. Chairperson, on departmental policies and procedures for classifying information, it has been argued that head of organs should not classify categories of information in the interest of consistency and transparency. This prerogative must be confined to the Minister of State Security. It should be noted that on this issue, there are many varied voices. Having considered all of them, we believe that this is a huge task and there is a need for each of the heads of organs of state to assume administrative responsibility. And as the buck stops with them, administratively speaking, they should therefore shoulder this responsibility under the political guidance and superintendence of responsible ministers. Regarding the commercial information, a number of submissions call for the inclusion of public interest override provision. We believe that this definition can be dropped and a tighter alignment with the Protection of Access to Information Act. This would also call for the review of the current definitions of national security. South Africa needs to know that economic espionage is a reality and that we have lost a number of our leading inventions and scientific breakthroughs due to our ability to protect these. Examples in this regard are too many to mention again. On the appeal process, Chairperson, I've considered the submission and believe that in keeping with the provisions of Intelligence Services Act of 2002, it is critical that this power be retained by the Minister of State Security with the provision that he or she may be able to establish a board to advise and assist him or her in the consideration of the appeal. These systems work well in all government departments where it obtains. I believe that there is a need, there's no need to deviate from it. In some of the submissions, there were concerns about the fact that penalties were too harsh, especially unauthorized disclosure. The severity of the sentence is deliberate, as the penalties are proportionate to the damage of unauthorized disclosure, and will cause disclosure will cause, and the harm they are likely to do. In addition, these severe penalties serve as a deterrent to unauthorized disclosure. Many advanced democracies provide more severe sentences compared to what contains in this bill, and can range to life imprisonment, or including in some cases death penalty. However, there is a need to ensure that those who overclassify are equally subjected to severe sentences. We will come to the committee to ensure the balance in the field, especially in this area. In short, Chairperson, there's been a lot in that. If these matters are considered, they must be considered equally serious, and I think we agree with that view, that there should be harsher sentences for those who wrongly classify deliberately or for ulterior motives. There was a call for the inclusion of public defense clause in the bill. It should be noted that the first country to amend its legislation to provide public interest defense was the United Kingdom in the amendment of the Official Secrets Act of 1889. This provision, in the light of its unintended consequences, has since been repealed in the United Kingdom from its laws, despite the continuous pressure being applied to it. Even in those dispensations where it is applicable, it is not used as a defense clause. It is restricted to people who are permanently under secrecy. I'm talking like in Canada, because most of the commentators are used in Canada. These people are expected not to take the information to those who may be able to publish it. Rather to the senior officers who can, in a regulated and authorized manner, bring it to the attention of the general public. Provisions of the bill are sufficient to address some of the founded fears that the provisions seek to address, but to include it as a defense clause will be to undermine the very objectives of this bill, as the information will always be in the public domain without following the due process. In seeking to remedy, seeking remedy from the court, those who may be affected by this unauthorized disclosure may not get remedy, even if the court found that the disclosure was not in the public interest. The disclosed information will not be retrieved, and harm would have been done irreparable. We welcome, however, that the use of public interest override to apply for access to classified information. This is one of our main aims of the bill, to provide due process in this regard. On the need of to protect information that is in the courts, it is important to reiterate that our courts are experienced in dealing with these challenges, and there is already a body of jurisprudence that serves as a guide in this regard. It is quite short-sighted to bear the secrets of information of the nation without regard to national security, international relations, and confidences, and possible harm that may befall an individual or group of individuals by so doing. For this reason, the courts remain the sole decision makers on whether to hold hearings in cameras or in the open, having applied their minds on the veracity of the situation. But protect sensitive information whose mass distribution could create situations too ghastly to contemplate, we must. It is it is the oil that replicates our democracy. And we have no intention, not today, not ever, to undermine the freedom we struggled and sacrificed for all Indians. Let me return to the definition deemed to be overthrown. We agree that there is a need to narrow some of the definitions, such as commercial interest and national interest, as they seek to define what information needs to be protected from undisclosed disclosure. Let me repeat. For the sake of my friends on the left today, I really appreciate the person that my friends are sitting on the left. I say, coming back to the issue of cross-definition, we agree that there is a need to narrow some of the definitions, such as commercial information and national interest, as they seek to define what information needs to be protected from unauthorized disclosure. To this end, we propose that these be deleted.
Order, please, Honorable Member. The minister is still busy.
Okay, I apologize. Honorable, I'll address you, Shetha. The information we are protecting is that which needs protection in terms of Section 34-44 of the Protection of Information Act. So, Promotion of Information Act of 2000. So, we are saying basically we must anchor this to the protection of information. We agree with those provisions. And that's information which we sought to protect. Second, excuse me. We seek to protect the second category of information we seek to protect is state security related information, which may attempt to elaborate below. This can mean intelligence information and other defense information and so on. But we are also saying, Shepherdson, the Canadian approach. That's what we may also consider. The Canadian approach of listing concerns to national security seems to be advisable in our considered opinion. This approach ensures that the definition's reach is clear and limited. For example, in keeping with this approach, South Africa seeks to protect legitimate national intelligence structure sources and information and methods, legitimate operational methods, doctrines and facilities and personnel of national security structures, sensitive confidences in the international relations, ongoing investigation of state security in Asia, including details of criminal investigation and legitimate police and law enforcement methods, economic, scientific, or technological secrets of vital to the Republic's stability, security, integrity, and development. We also seek in the national security to negate the hostile acts of foreign intervention, terrorists related activities, information peddlers, espionage, and unlawful acts against the constitutional order. These changes and some of the definitions are meaningful steps aimed at closing the gap between those who are genuinely concerned about some of the overbroad and vague definitions in the bill and achieving a secure, open, and prosperous society, free from fear, free from want. In conclusion, Chairperson, once more, Chairperson, would like to thank the members of the ad hoc committee for providing us with the opportunity to share our reflections on this subject. We reiterate our commitment to work with the committee and to support its work. Our gratitude also goes to the members of the public who made submissions and participated in the public hearing and the ongoing debate. Furthermore, to those who serve silently, we take our hats to our staff, the staff of the committee, the Stoic Law advisors who have been working very hard on this matter. Thank you very much, Mr. Nyanz and your team. And, and all those who have individually and collectively made this entire process success today. It is no exaggeration that this is just the beginning of a long challenging process aimed at finalizing a law that will be equal to the challenges facing our country, South Africa. The hard work still lies ahead of the committee, and we wish you well in your work. We are by your side, ready to answer calls and to provide whatever support you expect of us. Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks for the seat.
Thank you, Minister, for a very long but a very important submission. I note in your submission, Honourable Minister, a number of concessions. I can see a great enthusiasm amongst some of the members of the committee now. I've already got a list of names here of people wanting to engage you. I am informed that the Honourable Landers, the Honourable Smuts, and then the Honourable Advocate Swartz is also, and then there is the Honourable Mania. So quite a very detailed list already, Honourable Minister. I think the committee is very, very enthusiastic on to engage you on your presentation. So let me not waste time. Let me go to the Honourable Landers. Honourable Landers.
Chairperson, thank you, and my thanks and appreciation to the Minister for his lengthy response. Just a few issues, if I may. Our oversight system and dispensation here in Parliament borrows much from the Canadian experience, and so the Minister's response with regard to the Canadian approach to national security resonates with some of us. So really my question then to you, Minister, is do you think this approach would suffice in addressing the challenges posed by many of the submissions that we have received? That's my first question, Chairperson. Secondly, can the Minister further elucidate for us, he speaks on page 7 about the protection of our food security. If he is able to do so today, we would greatly appreciate further elucidation of that particular point. We welcome the removal of commercial information on national interests, but the other serious concern, Chairperson, through you to the Honourable Minister, is not so much the Director General's power to classify, but rather the delegated authority. I think that is where
the sticking point lies. In brief, Chairperson, those are just a few of my comments.
Honourable Minister.
Thanks for sharing. Let me start with the last question. The concern about the delegation formulation. We still believe that it is, as we have argued, the responsibility of the head of an institution to do the classification in line with the national guidelines which should be put. The intention is not to delegate this function to lower officials. And if it has to be delegated, it must be the next highest official. And but the responsibility and the responsibility must remain with the head of an organ or institution. It may be the considered view of the committee during this submission that they may limit it to that, or even the danger, Chairperson, we're worried about if we don't put any delegation and leave it to the head of an institution, that it may create bureaucratic problems. But because the intention is not to have a loads of classified information, it may be in the wisdom of the committee when they consider that they put a delegation, that they will agree that the delegation should not, because as we have mentioned in our reviews, since 1994, which have been done on this classification and declassification and authority to do so, it has never been the intention that that should be delegated to lower officials. That would be my initial response, that the intention is not to delegate to lower officials, and the back must stop with the head of the institution, must take that responsibility as an accounting officer for that institution. The issues of national interest and commercial interest, let me say, as we have stated, economic espionage is a reality. But we agree that the way it is crafted in the bill at this stage, it may be too broad. And our approach is to just remove it and find a clearer and narrower approach of defining what needs to be protected. I think that's what is a key thing. We are saying that we must, the national interest is a very nice concept. It's a new concept, which is done in all new democracies. I can see my friend is shaking his head. No, it is. But its definition has become very difficult. And we don't think that we should just stick to it if it causes definitional problem or it causes this whiteness. And that's why we say it should be dropped and start anchoring the beam in terms of what needs to be protected, to what limited mandatory and disclosures in terms of promotion of access to information and matters pertaining to security, basically. And which then takes me then to the Canadian model. The Canadian model just lists what is it, just specifies what is it. You can add it and change it as threat change. It must be just list what is the direct of these threats and try and be narrow as possible in defining them, as we have attempted to do so. And we hope that the committee and our proposal, which we present in terms of actual amendments in the next sittings, will further clarify that. Because there is no country which remains static on the list, but it is important that there is a consensus and the list is clear and narrow enough, because, as we say, there should be a balance. in an open democratic society, we need secrets to protect the very same democracy. But when you are putting secrets, they mustn't unduly take other rights. So the Canadian system, Honorable Landers, is well considering the approach. We're not saying because their national interest in those matters is much different from ours. But the approach of, that's what we're basically saying, that we're not exactly the same. Mr. Landers, you remember that when the new parliament was taking even the oversight, we didn't just take them blank as they are. We're taking the best experiences which are consistent with our form of government and democracy. So we'll urge the members to seriously look into that. On these matters of food security, maybe to a less, I was just talking as an example that in future, any country which can ensure security, food security for their citizens, will be riddled with conflicts, wars, and destructions. So it is very important that as a nation, we continue to ensure that we have food security for now, which we do have for now. But as we go into future, there are lots of things which will affect our capacity to provide that good food for our citizens. The water, for instance. That's why then we engage in this scientific research, both by our private sector and our government institutions, to ensure that the food we produce in future can resist drought, can resist the disease of the future, so that we can ensure food security. That's why we ensure that we produce animal vaccines to protect our animals from diseases which may kill these animals. So the example I was using, for instance, of the some of our laboratories in the agriculture, that there was no proper protection of that intellectual property rights. The people who were working there, they left, and some of them left with that intellectual property. They've gone to private companies, and those companies established laboratories in our neighboring countries. Now, if you talk of animal vaccines, whether it's triple fever and so on, we're the world leader, we're selling to Europe everywhere. And all these advanced countries have been trying to get our technologies. But today, we are importing vaccines. We're the net exporter of these vaccines because of lack of protecting that type of information. So I'm saying these are the things which affect our ordinary people. In fact, our farmers, but our farmers are very critical in ensuring our food security as a nation. I was just using that as an example. We can use a similar example in our energy security. Whether it is oil, electricity, there is a competition to be ahead. to be ahead. So that we can first sell these technologies to the rest of the world. As I was saying, those are important things. Yesterday you had ministers discussing one aspect. It's just one aspect of our energy security. But as a nation, we do have quite advanced technologies, and we're competing very well with the rest of the world, even in the energy, ensuring that this adequate energy for our citizens in the future. There's adequate energy that we can export or deliver those capacities to the rest of the world. So, as I was saying, the medical isotope, for instance, the reports we have at our disposal that since the advent of democracy, we abandoned the nuclear bombs approach of the use of to more civilian use of our nuclear technology we have. Just by advancing that with our companies and government institutions, we have become the world leader. We are only competing with Canada in terms of providing what is called medical isotope. When they put in those cans, they inject with these things to check, hey, is your brain still good? Or half of it is gone. So, like I'm saying, we are the world leader in this medical isotope, and it brings a lot of revenue. next to South Africa, billions of rands, just out of medical hazard. So it is critical that we protect these research and in order to make sure that we remain in the competitive edge, because things have changed. We are friends, but we are not really friends, because we compete. We compete in order to ensure that the economic integrity and development of South Africa, the SADC, and the rest of the world is equitable. So those are the things, if I may just explain elaboration. I hope it helps you in terms of the issues of food security. Mr. Landers, thank you.
The Honorable Smash.
Chairperson, Honorable Minister, what the Ronnie Casserole's bill did was to legislate the status quo, and I was shocked when you reintroduced it, because the status quo in South Africa consisted of spying in areas where no intelligence service should legitimately be spying, and secrecy spread like an oil slick in this country because the NIA was turned into the filing clocks of the nation. So I was shocked when you reintroduced it. I have found some of your arguments and examples this morning close to grotesque with respect, because I see that you are still in the grip of the political paranoia which influenced intelligence after the cabinet and the president in 2003 instructed that espionage would now take place in respect of politics and political formations and parties, and also on economic issues. And your examples about embassies spying on our presidents and deputy presidents and opposition leaders, and our leaders, it shows me you are still in the grip of this political paranoia that dates from the era of President Mbeki. The idea of spying on economics is dangerous because it is obviously so that it could turn into a recipe for corruption. Trade secrets are something that are looked
Honorable,
after
Honorable
under
Smith,
other laws.
Honorable
yes, sir,
Smith.
I am.
Is there a question? We'd like you to question
yes,
the minister on his
submission. Yes, no, there is, sir. But let me say to the minister that I've heard you, that you say you want, you would be happy. We are the lawmakers. We will do what we will do. But you want the definition of economics drop, but you haven't told us whether the entire category of classification for economic matters, in your view, ought to be dropped, and of course they must be dropped. Secondly, you've made a gesture, you've suggested that Section 7, which allows the intelligence minister to say what the categories of classification ought to be, that is too onerous a duty, and you would like to dispose of that and give that to the heads of departments. But, sir, what are the intelligence services doing as the filing clerks of the nation at all? Why are the intelligence services the ones who come and inspect whether a department or an entity is looking after so-called valuable information at all? Why is the alteration, destruction, and loss of information in your remit? It doesn't belong there. There's a thing called the Electronic Transactions Act. Electronic Communications and Transactions Act, which deals with critical databases. It creates an offence of hacking. The intelligence services have simply spread their remit so wide, South Africans didn't even know that, and now you want to legislate the very same. And that is unacceptable. It should be narrowed right down to real security issues, and I see your thinking is going in that direction at the end of the document. Here's the concrete question. You argue we cannot have an information, we cannot have an override. But sir, this is South Africa. We, like very few others, have constitutionalized the right to information. That is your starting point. It is unqualified, it is unfettered. South African citizens have right of access to information held by the state. The Constitution says you can give effect to that right in a law. That law is the PAYA of the year 2000. The Promotion of Access to Information Act. That law prevails. It prevails over any other law that you want to write. And that law contains an override in Section 46. And just to prove to you that you will have to go that route, but that we will go that route, the Defence Force, in its law, precisely observes that fact. Section 104 of the Defence Act says that subject to the
Honourable
promotion
Smuts,
of Access to Information
Smuts,
Act.
Honourable Smuts, with respect, I have you a question for the Minister on his presentation, because you seem to be lecturing the Minister now.
It is a question.
I think what you are raising,
sir,
now is
right?
Matter that you might raise in the committee deliberations, that the Minister was wrong and you don't agree with him.
But does he not concede, sir?
I put a question to him, and I would allow it.
Surely you concede, sir, that we have a constitutionalized right to information that is given effect to in a law that is already in other statutes dealing with security, such as the Defence Act, observed that fact and makes the provision dealing with disclosure of information subject to the promotion of access to information. It follows therefrom that a public interest override is recognized under this Act, and we should do the same.
It seems to be a legal opinion, but Honourable Minister.
Now, let me first say our submission is, I repeat, we say we must first anchor what we need to protect in terms of what is in PAEA. But in PAEA, in addition, it doesn't deal with it was deliberate not put there, intelligence information and all those things, what we call state secret information. Now listen to me. Okay. So we accept that PAEA is the act which is prescribed by the Constitution and in terms of access to information. And but this very same act puts mandatory non-disclosure and the other one, conditional non-disclosure of certain from Section 34. So we're saying some of particularly mandatory and some of the information needs to be protected, because we can't say that people are not supposed to have access to it and then you go and disclose it at the same time. So we base it, no, you must listen, because I listen to you. No, don't shake hands before I finish. What we're basically saying, we should anchor what needs to be protected. The question here is about what needs to be protected. To the PAEA. We agree with that principle fully. And that's why we're saying less narrow, because our attempt here is to narrow what needs to be protected. And I'm sure the member will agree. But the member will also agree there were certain sections which are not included in PAEA for specific reasons, as I said. Coming back to the issue of valuable information and the databases, the valuable information is not information which is protected against disclosure, but is to create a uniform system of ensuring that this information is protected. You can put to say it's criminalized, but if you don't put a system how that information should be protected, that's what this bill says. If you have valuable information, or databases, whatever valuable information you have, then there must be a system to protect it, not necessarily to destroy it, to alteration. So it sets the standards of how that information should be protected. If I may, this political paranoia, we know it. We have no paranoia, madam. What we have the reality which are facing our nation, which we are a member of. And we are seeking to address, we are not seeking to get intelligence to meddle in the politics of the country. We are seeking to say, let's deal with these realities which are there and find a coherent and systemic approach. We should be clear, even for any officials who are engaging in this, because, as you know, currently we have got a policy called NIS. And you know, as a member of parliament, that policy can't be enforced because it's not law. Well, this way, let's not finish. I listened to you, I didn't interrupt you. Let's be courteous, let's be honorable to each other as members. So we're saying we're creating this system that there should be a national system which guides those who deal with this secrecy. It's not about paranoia, we're talking about clear threats which were there. It's not imagined threats which we're talking about. So there's nothing about paranoia, trying to... we are not saying we want our people to be involved in the economic side. There's no section in this bill. We say our intelligence officers must go and do economic spying. We say we must protect ourselves as a nation. That's all what the bill is saying. Not saying near South African Secret Service, Crime Intelligence or Defense Intelligence must go and say, hey, what's there? And do these bad things people are saying. We can't legislate that. All what we seek to protect, because the reality is that these hostile foreign spies, they're doing it every day. And the reality of it is that these hostile spies, they are not going to stand and come here to the committee and say, hey, please, don't close our tent. They'll use any other means to make sure that their voice is still heard, their interest is still being pursued. So there's no political paranoia at the Insmart. When we're talking about political leaders, we're talking about policy making. Here in South Africa, we are a multi-party democracy. And these parties are allowed there to so that they can enhance the national debate in order to make sure that we improve our policies. So if people are targeting the policy makers, we don't want the policy pronouncement of the DA to be not the policy pronouncement of what comes out of the members and delegates of your party, but to be the belief of some foreign interest. That's what we don't want, the manipulation. I'm just using that as well, I'm not saying that's happening. Because we are very important in our constitutional democracy, because we created this multi-party democracy, but we want your real beliefs and real views. We don't want foreign views through you. So that's why we're saying it is important. Yes, it is important that when we engage in that sphere of national debate, we are really genuinely having. We don't want people to manipulate our political processes. We have got a responsibility, I think, as a nation, to make sure that there's freedom of political expression in our country, but that freedom of political is not a manipulation, we're not progress. That's very important in our view, and we believe that it is in line with our constitutional order. It's not about politics, it's not about infighting within the party. We're not interested, but those are political contestations. That's not our interest. And it should never be the interest of our structures. But to protect the integrity of our political system is very important. That there is no undue, whether it is within the ANC, we don't want the ANC to be a proxy of foreign forces. We don't want the COP to be the proxy of foreign forces. That is the debate within the COP and their policies, and so they can debate in this international. So the notion that we are trying to influence political or becoming politically paranoid, and that's what, if you go today to any of our national intelligence structures, there are clear codes which govern them, and the members, they know very well that if they engage in internal party politics meddling, that's illegal. And they know very well. You can go to any member of our services. You can go to crime intelligence, you can go to NIA, you can go to SAS, you can go to defense intelligence. Those ethos are clearly and are very clearly specified, and they are known now. You can go as oversight bodies, we've got Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. I mean, we're not saying that there'll be some rogue elements who won't try to do this, but we deal with them as they arise. Because to us, our constitutional democracy is young, it needs to flourish, it needs protection, it must be done so. So I'll stop at that, Shepherdson. We can never inform our spies to go and to our neighbors and see. That's what emergency and put it in our law. We can never do that. Thank you. There's no country which does that in the world either. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Just to repeat what I said earlier, the Minister here is responding to the submissions of the public hearings. Everything and anything that the Minister says, he says here in an advisory capacity, not as a member of the committee. The committee may or may not accept the advice and the information that the Minister is putting here. It could reject it. But I think the Minister comes here in good faith, as he has said. He comes here as somebody that wants to assist the committee when it deliberates on the matters, and I think we should take these things. I'd like to keep the temperature normal. I don't want, because we are all trying to do a job here, and I don't think it is necessary that we should unnecessarily increase the temperature. We will get through this process in a nice, civil and respectable manner, even if we are going to disagree on some of the key issues. So, Advocate Swartz, can I hand over to you?
Chair, thank you. I'd like to increase the temperature slightly. If I see my colleague here that loaned a jacket, in the ANC colleague, it seems it is a bit cold here. But, Minister, thank you. Firstly, thank you for your advice to us to remove national interest and commercial interest. I think we'll take that advice very carefully. And it is clearly a step in the right direction for us to consider, but clearly there is a long way still to go with the bill. Could I just ask, one of the most compelling submissions was from the Human Rights Commission and made some very fundamental and grave concerns relating to constitutionality, which fly almost directly in the face of the state law advisors. And in particular, and it's an issue which my colleague asked about, and that is the public interest override. Now, bear in mind that the Human Rights Commission is the custodian of PIA, which is a constitutional bill. Just one short sentence from the Human Rights Commission, where they state that in excluding a general public interest override, the bill falls foul of a number of basic human rights commitments, both the public right to know, access to information, the principle of openness, freedom of expression, are negated by its absence. So they make a very strong argument for a public interest override. You also in your submission referred to that you wished, and that is what the bill says, it wants to harmonize itself with PIA. Now, we believe that there's a long way still to go in that regard to harmonize the two. But if you then look at that mandatory disclosure in the public interest, you refer to Section 46 of PIA. If one looks particularly then, the section relating, Section 41, defense security, there is a public defense override relating to defense of the public, security of the public. Correctly, you said the intelligence aspect has been excluded. But surely, that gives a lot of substance for a strong consideration of a public interest override, if you would just comment on that. Secondly, if I may, minimum sentences. We've got a number of pieces of legislation before us in the Justice Committee. One example is the Combating and Prevention of Trafficking Bill, which is a very serious issue, where one of the penalties is life imprisonment, to indicate how serious it is. Is it really, there's no minimum sentences in that legislation, but is it really justifiable to have minimum sentences in this legislation? Thirdly, just the role of the independent, of you as the minister being the final arbiter. You referred to a board. The Human Rights Commission and many of the other submitters have referred to the need for an independent oversight body, an appeal body, with the legal principle being nemo iudex in sua causa. No one should be a judge in their own case. Would you just comment on that, whether that is clearly something we will be considering as a committee? And then lastly, the role of the Human Rights Commission. Surely they should play a much stronger role in this whole bill, as they have the experience and the background of the whole issue of access to information. Surely they should play a stronger role in this. Thank you, Chair, for those few questions.
Honourable Minister.
Maybe let me start from the end. I'm trying to understand what role, really, will human rights play in classification procedures of information. Because they are, my understanding, their functions are clearly defined to promote the culture of human rights. And that's why we take their input. But and I'm not sure whether you mean they must be involved in the administration of this. Because the people have got the right to go to them if they feel also that their rights are not. So that it made the member we can engage exactly because we didn't specify what type of role they can play. And they've not indicated what role themselves if they want to play. But coming back to the questions you have raised, the issue of constitutionality is not only limited to public interest. I'll come back to the public interest thing. The issue of constitutionality, as we have said, we've looked at the bill as it stood, and there was nothing unconstitutional as we perceive it there. But it is our responsibility in a responsive government to listen to the views of the public. And in this regard, our main thing, which was our main challenge, which could possibly mean or that the bill is unconstitutional, were those areas which appears to be protected. And that's why we're saying, in taking these views of the public seriously, we may have to reconsider that. And you said you're welcoming those. The public interest of a right, if you talk of it as a system of access, like it is there in the access, not of disclosure, as a system of access, we've got no problem with it. Like we have said, the Canadian system, they use it as a system of access, not that of defense. It's not a defense. What we are trying, if I'm not a lawyer, maybe you'll see, help me, my learned friend. We have absolutely no problem if you use that as an access issue. What we have a problem, where you say you use it as a defense for you doing wrong things. Because the harm might be already been done. That information will be there in public already. That's where the difference is. And I would like to reiterate, I've got absolutely no problem to use this public interest as an access, not as a defense for doing wrong things, for unauthorized disclosure. You can't take a document and go and splash it there in the public and say, I really thought it was in the public interest. I'm sorry. Now that the courts are saying it's not in the public interest. Because the harm will be done. I hope you understand our feeling. But as a form of access, if you craft it as a form of access, we have absolutely no problem. The minimum sentences. you are saying human trafficking is a very serious crime. Please, I agree with you. But you are saying somebody who can, let me take a top secret document, something which can, if disclosed, can cause irreparable damage, put this country into a standstill. I can't imagine that as mine. It's the type of harm. We say it must be proportional to the harm which might be caused. And that's why we then give a clearer guidance on the classification system, so that people were moving away from that one of the administrative justice. This is top secret. Because that's what the apartheid system is. You stop, it's just any document, you stamp it secret, and it's there. We bring in this human rights approach to classification, that the mass people can't just put stamps. So, to me, some of these crimes are very serious. They are equally serious. And that's why we then say we put the minimum sentences. But as you know, there is always, whenever we put minimum sentences, some override clause to make sure that we don't limit the discretion of the judges and jury. And those override clause are there in the bill. Thank you.
The Honourable Mayor.
My friend.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Minister for his presentation. Chair, earlier the Minister said that he had listened to the views of the public. But the question here is whether he has in fact heard the views of the public, and I think that there's some doubt about that. Now, on the...
Honourable Mania, please. Please, Honourable Mania, I ask to keep the temperature. Please, Honourable Mania. Keep the temperature...
Chair, my Honourable colleague has just asked me to raise the temperature.
Perhaps
because
you
she's
take
cursed.
Your jacket back here now, because I can see you either overheating or cooling down. I proceed on, but keep the thing without attacking the Minister's intent.
Thank you, Chair. I have five questions. Minister, at the ad hoc committee's meeting on the 1st of July, you said that, and I quote, there was no clause in this bill that limited the freedom of the media. Now, given what we've heard in the public submission phases of this bill, and given what we've heard from literally hundreds of non-governmental organizations, do you still hold the view that there is no clause in this bill that limits the freedom of the press? And if you do hold that view, why do you hold the view? That's my first question. My second question concerns the public interest override. I wonder if you would accept that your formulation, where you say that the public information, the public interest override, in effect means that the state must permit anyone to leak or solicit classified information. Is that not a total distortion of what the public interest override would actually mean? Because the public interest override would surely mean that information could only be disclosed or published if there was a genuine or bona fide act in the furtherance or in the promotion of the public interest. That is in fact the formulation that was used by the former Minister for Intelligence. Now my question to you is, the former Minister of Intelligence supported the public override clause. Why are you now opposed to it? That's my second question. My third question concerns information peddling. Now, the question when it comes to information peddling is, what is the problem we're trying to solve? Because you're absolutely correct, Minister, that information peddlers probably produce documents based on snippets, inferences, innuendos, gossip and rumors. But the real problem is, why do the intelligence services believe it? It seems to me that the problem we're trying to remedy is a massive capacity constraint within the intelligence services. And that is a problem that we cannot legislate. That is an administrative problem. Because, Minister, surely it must strike you as virtually bizarre that intelligence services would be shuffling around documents and considering and contemplating whether Michael Jackson was financing or involved in a coup in South Africa. It's frankly bizarre. and comes out of a Mike Myers movie. There's only one title that I can remember, and I can't repeat the title of the movie in this house chair. My fourth question concerns the financial implications. We've discussed this before. We have heard during the public submission phase that there would be fairly dramatic administrative consequences of this bill. I mean, if it was implemented in its current form, the officials from the Department of State Security would no doubt be arranging the files of the Natal Sharks Board. And so the question is, have you contemplated or done any cost estimates for this bill? Because, of course, in the memorandum you say there are no financial implications. We know that cannot be true. My last question, Minister. You've argued that we're moving from a apartheid-style culture of secrecy to a democratic culture of transparency. Now, again, I think that needs to be questioned, and I'll tell you why. Again, at our hearings on the 1st of July 2010, you did a presentation on information peddling, which was done before this committee, before several members of the media, and was reported upon in the media. And yet you have refused to provide members of this committee with that presentation. And I have therefore been compelled to apply for that presentation using the...
Honourable Member, I must stop you. Honourable Member, can you just hold that, Honourable Member?
Thank you, Chair.
On that last question, I'm not going to allow the Minister to answer that because it's a matter that was clearly discussed in the meeting. You know what happened in that meeting. There was a request for that meeting to be held in camera. We adjourned. I discussed the matter with the Minister at the time. We reconvened on the understanding that the meeting will proceed as an open meeting, but that the document would not be handed out. That was the basis on which the Minister was prepared to make that presentation. Now, you are correct that there is a subject matter that you are still pursuing, but I would not like you to pursue it in this meeting because it's not a matter for this meeting to deal with. Now you will be, the matter that you are pursuing is outside this meeting, if you understand what I say, and you and the Minister can deal with that matter outside the meeting. Can I allow the Honourable Minister to answer?
Can I respond? Because he has already asked this thing, it's public. I agree with you, Chair. The last question, Honourable Minister, is unfair. You know very well as a member of this committee, you adopt procedures of work as a committee. And we comply with those procedures, and you want me to breach those procedures. It just can't be done in a democratic dispensation. So my suggestion to you, go back to the committee, because it's not me who took this decision. It is the committee. Go back to the committee and raise the matter and review the decision there in the committee, other than grandstanding here in the public about it. I don't have the power to change the procedures of the committee as a minister. It is the committee itself which must review those changes. But let me come back to the substantial matters here, if I try. We have listened and we have heard. That's why if we didn't hear, we're not going to come with proposals. And as the ANC government, we always listen to the people, irrespective of their background and origin or party. We listen even to the opposition party. We do listen. That's what makes us strong as the ANC government, because we do listen to people and we hear them and we act after hearing them. That's why we have taken these actions, to say there must be changes. If we didn't hear, we were just going to say, Aslim is a chain of Kuchayek. But I mean, we are going to say, let just things continue. That's all what I mean.
Mr.
We
don't have interpreters.
I've just translated it. I apologize, Shepherd. the problem, what is it problem with the information theft, really? Is it because our officials or intelligence stupid? No, not because they're stupid. What we're trying to do here, we're trying to find and criminalize bad activity, which is causing conflict and diversion in government, not only in the intelligence services. The activities of these individuals is not only directed to intelligence. The latest example, like in the Browse Mall, it was directed at the Scorpions. That's not intelligence. Some of the activities, you must listen. The Browse Mall one was directed at the Scorpions and influencing how prosecution should be conducted and how investigation should be conducted. And it was false. And it was wrong. Because you divert the institution from its normal duty for other ulterior motives. Others, like I'm saying, they'll go to our people, our energy sector, like our companies in the energy sector. That's not intelligence. But with the view to alter and get access and change and get access money, financial rewards in this case. The example we're saying about that they are also not just limited to South Africa, to other governments. I know of one thing. Where they went with these conspiracies and they were paid by that government. And now the case is in court. The case can't continue because they can't come and produce evidence. But a lot of money, millions, has been paid to them already. What I'm trying to say is not limited to intelligence. We're trying to criminalize bad activity of peddling into the government system. But if people knowingly do that, they know that they'll be punished. We did use one example of one gentleman who was peddling very dangerous information in the early 2000s. He was arrested, but there was no provision to actually prosecute him. So we know that the activity is wrong, but we don't have the statutes which can allow us to deal with this matter effectively. So it's not about the capacity problem within our intelligence community. The other question was in relation to my interpretation of override. I can repeat it. As I said to the previous honorable, my learned friend, using public defense as an access issue, we have absolutely no problem. But using it to abuse the system and disclosing in an unauthorized manner the information you're not supposed to disclose, with the hope that you use that as a defense, we have a problem. That's all the way we deal. As I said, I'm not a learned friend. The learned friends will find the correct way of catching it. We have looked into this. We have looked into the international experience. We have looked even the provisions in the Promotion of Access of Information Act, and we have come to that conclusion. And our advice is there, is as we have put it. The illustration there was just to illustrate our point of using as an access issue or as a defense issue. Maybe that's where we differ, honorable member. But I hope I've clarified this matter, and we will maybe when we are putting this case discussing extra amendment, maybe better clarify it in a more explicit manner. The financial implications. Yes, Mr. Maynard, we did admit that there will be financial implications. I don't know why I should be repeated every time we meet. And we did also say the way the deal will be implemented is not going to just be boom. There will be time and interaction with the department. So that first of all, they give us a scope of what's the type of information they like to be protected. And then allow them to, there be enough time for them to put that into their budgetary process. So the implementation part of the Act, there is a phase-in because we must first develop national standards. During that period, we'll be interacting with the State Department. They'll be telling us. The others will be asking for exemptions. Others will be saying, no, put this thing under the main department and so on. So there are all those provisions there in the Act. So to come up with upfront financial implications on a process which further needs that interaction would be premature. But whatever financial implications would be able to enter into budget processes because we've got enough time to interact with the department. So I can come with a guesstimate of figures, but I don't like those. I like facts. Because if you stay with facts, you come closer to truth. So, but we can come with a big estimate. The intention, really, in the application share, maybe let me put it clearly. Those departments which deal with security departments, we'll expect them to be able to comply soon because there are already existing mechanisms within those departments. We'll also hope that there'll be prioritization of those departments where there's extra real threat now, like I was saying, in terms of our food security, our energy security, and so on. So we'll try and prioritize those. There won't be just a one omnibus in dealing with these issues. So we're looking at a phased approach in terms of the implementation. I hope my friend, Honorable Maynard, will remain friends and there's a better understanding on this matter and we'll have better engage them.
Minister, please don't provoke my members. Yes, sir, Honorable Maynard. You see what you did now. Honorable Maynard, what is the fault now?
Chair,
is this a follow-up?
This is a brief follow-up.
The
minister admitted the small matter of the freedom of the press. The second thing is he didn't answer my question in respect of the public interest override. The former Minister of Intelligence supported a public interest override.
You went to your Honourable Mania, do you know that?
But I can answer.
The question is, why would the Minister change his mind?
The previous Minister supported it, certainly wasn't in the bill.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Dinsmart, as we are starting this meeting, he mentioned that why did I introduce the draconian Ronnie Castro's bill as it is. And now he says Ronnie Castro's bill was better. No, let me finish. But to be honest, we have mentioned in our background various ministers who have worked on this field, from Dala Omar to John Sandler, Lindiwe Sisulu, Honorable Ronnie Castro. They all have worked in terms of preparation, done a lot of preparatory work through internal committees and sometimes external committees to try and clarify the matters on what needs to be done. So I'm not here, and I've said we appreciate the work which has been done, because the intention was a good intention. Maybe the products we came up with were not good or were not better crafted. That was one of the reasons why the bill of 2008 was withdrawn. Because you, honorable members of the committee, raised concerns. Yes. And that's exactly why, when I was appointed, we withdrew the bill to try and correct what the members of parliament said then. And we brought back the bill. Now you have raised other concerns. We are saying there is a method of correcting those concerns, and through the amendments which we are proposing. So I don't think really it would be helpful And I can assure you, within this church I belong in called ANC, it may not create conflict because we debate issues, we are robust by nature, but all what we do is to try and improve the issues. I'm not going to be sitting here and start fighting Minister Castro. He's done a lot of work in this respect. Minister Sud has done a lot of work in this respect in trying to improve the situation in order to deal with the threat. The same with the Atlanta and the later on. The issue about the media, what I said, and I repeat, there is not a single clause which talks about media in the bill. That's what we said there. And there's still not a clause, which, because there's no targeting of the media. When we legislate, we don't legislate for a component of a society. The issues of access to information, they're not only about media. They're only about ordinary citizens, ordinary people, South Africans. So that's what I'm trying to differentiate, that there's no specific targeting of media, and I would like the media to continue its work, unless you are saying media must then get what they are not supposed to get in terms of our laws, even currently or in the future, or what we seek. But because we think we have got a very robust media, and we encourage that. And there is no way we can ever, in law, in such laws, try to put and say we want to suppress the media. What we say, the unfortunate part of this whole debate has been this confusion which has been happening in the public, parallel public debate outside there, as if there is a definite link between the protection of information and the media. They deal with totally different issues. To extend that those issues may affect the functioning of the media in a different manner, but to club them together as if they are one issue, and to club them together as if this government is worse than apartheid, I think it's really far from the truth, and it's not true. And I would like to say also, we've been quite disturbed, Shepherdson, by the presumption, because I know when we're engaging some of the media, and I can't believe that people who are senior in the media, they can presume that this committee has finished its work, because the venom which has been there, it has been as if this committee has finalized its consideration of the bill, which is not true. And we appeal to the members of the public, particularly those in the media, that they should respect parliamentary processes. These parliamentary processes are part of democracy. So we can't then go and pretend, because it really then puts a lot of doubt to all these members. Because it says Bill Smart has passed this bill. It says Mr. Beshas has passed this bill. And some of these commentators, they even go and have personal attacks on members of this committee. I think in a democracy, because members of parliament, we must bear in mind, they are the ones who are going to take the final view on the matter. Yes. So I'm really appealing that let's respect the parliamentary process. And I want to reiterate again today, Shepherdson, that to those who are outside there, while you continue debating, please respect that there's a parliamentary process, and as ANC government, we do respect the views of these members. We'll engage the members. We only believe in persuading the members. And we'll continue to persuade until we find each other. Thank you.
So you're in agreement with a consistent temperature, Honourable Minister. We have the Honourable Fichler that has a question still, and then that would be the last. We are going to adjourn after that. We had agreed, Honourable Member, before you came, that we will not run past 11 because we have been approached by members to be released, and we are running now late. And the Honourable Fichler has indicated that he wants a question, and that would be the last question. Those honourable members that still have further questions, there will be an opportunity to engage the minister on these issues. because this is not the last time. The minister has indicated that this is only the first session. He might require a few more meetings to finish with his presentation. The Honourable Fichler, if you can be quick.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. And firstly, let me thank the minister for this elaborate explanation and input and empowering us on this question of this bill that has been the outcry right through the country. Firstly, there have been an outcry from a number of when there was a public hearing about stifling of whistling blowers, and to the extent of saying that this will be encouraging sort of covering up for misdeeds and corruption and many other things. But to me, the explanation that has been put here today clears that halubalu, and also shows clearly that there will be transparency enough for all the people to be able to understand that it is not only those who can read the media, who can see the media, who can read the media, but the general masses of the people of South Africa that we want to reach, that we want to protect for peace and stability in the country. Thank you.
Honourable Minister, do you want to comment? I think it was an observation by the honourable member.
No, I thank the member. I think the issue of corruption, really, I think there is no member here in this parliament who can say create things which promote corruption. And that's why we're in agreement with the even proposal to make sure, because the bill does say that we can't classify things in order to hide your inefficiency, corrupt activities, and other unlawful things. and we will never have such intentions. That's why we are more amenable to suggestions that there may be stiffening. We might have to stiffen so that even the public servants, as they engage in this activity, they must know that there are consequences for doing wrong things. Because, as we said, we have this balance, we give them the secrecy, but it must never be abused, the secrecy. I think that's the principle. In order of taking ordinary people, I'll appeal really, because to the members of this committee, and to try and engage in informing the public exactly what we're trying to do. Some may feel, no, that's not their responsibility, but I think I'm talking to you as members of parliament. And I appeal that the debate issues in public, if there can be some ceasefire and allow the process of parliament to take place. So I'm saying it very consciously. See, it will be very bad precedent. It will be very bad precedent that when the members of parliament give an opportunity to public to give their views, and they even invite them to give these views, but before you even consider that, then you create another parallel debate outside. I don't think it's a healthy thing. But we cannot dictate to them. They are free to do as what they like. But my main worry, if you start undermining the institutions which this constitution has set up, if you undermine parliament, we're in great danger. We can't undermine the legislative process. We can influence. There are all avenues to influence the process in parliament. That's all what I really appeal that should be done. We have noted the interest even from international NGOs, and in this regard, and I think we have In short, we think we have dealt with all those areas which were having possible doubt that we may be too overbroad, we may be encroaching into other constitutional rights. We really feel that if members follow that approach, that will be assisting in taking the right process. Thank you very much, Jefferson, for the for the inputs, a further inputs and engagement from the members, and we'll continue to engage you at every possible avenue. Thank you.
Honourable members, visitors, we've come to the end of today's proceedings. Thank you for being with us here today, Minister. Allow me just to say that you would by now have noticed that this is an ongoing process, and it is clearly going to be a long process. So, as the Minister has appealed, let us not exaggerate that this is a process that has been accelerated through the committee, and that they are the thing is already decided. It is not. We have not even yet started as a committee. There will not be a meeting next week. The next meeting will be in October sometime, but honourable members will be notified. Those of you that are not aware, that Parliament will be going into a constituency period. One will have to look at the parliamentary programme, and honourable members will then be advised when the next meeting will be. And we will expect that the next meeting the Minister will continue with his engagement. There are a number of issues that I have been informed by the Minister that he still wishes to address the committee on. So thank you, honourable members, and the public for coming here. This meeting is now adjourned.